Hamlet. Yeah, of course, Hamlet. What was I thinking? Okay, let's see. Something by Ibsen. Check. Check off. Check. George Bernard Shaw. Natch.
Hey, Graham.
Tennessee Williams. Arthur Miller. David Mamet. Noel Coward.
Oh, are you selecting your fantasy theater season again?
Oh, hey, Amanda. Yep. Boy, it's simple. I don't know why people have such a hard time with this.
Right? Okay, well, can I take a look? Wow. Okay, so you would put all of these plays on in the same season?
Well, you can't go wrong with the classics.
Hmm. Okay. Not a lot of women on that list.
That's true. Yeah, we should mix it up a little bit. Diversity, that's the key. Can't go wrong with diversity. Okay, let's add Yasmina Reza, Tony Kushner, August Wilson, Paula Vogel, Joanna Murray-Smith.
Great. But aren't you going to want some Canadian playwrights in there?
Canadian. Yes, absolutely. Okay, scratch all those. Let's go for an all-Canadian season. Canadians love watching plays by other Canadians, duh. So, Norm Foster, David French, Michelle Tremblay, Daniel McIver.
Great. Mm-hmm. Again, all men.
Ooh, diverse selection of Canadian playwrights. That's the key. You can't go wrong with the diverse selection of Canadian playwrights. Hannah Moscovich, Joe McLeod, Thompson Highway, Drew Hayden Taylor, Melissa James Gibson, Trey Anthony, Wajib Muad, Brad Fraser, Judith Thompson.
What about a musical?
Musicals! Yes, everybody loves musicals!
And make sure you have a farce in there.
You know what? Let's just do Oklahoma and Arsenic and Old Lace and call it a day.
Remember, this is just pretend.
Ooh, I wonder if I could get the rights for Hamilton.
Not a chance in hell, but God, I love your enthusiasm, Graham. Welcome to Big Theater Small Towns, a podcast dedicated to all the great things about small town theater.
My guest today is Ian Mogash, the artistic director of Theater by the Bay, located in Barrie, Ontario. Ian graduated from George Brown Theatre School in 2015, and since then has worked tirelessly to bring a wide range of quality theatre to Barrie and elsewhere, scooping up a number of awards along the way, including Young Professional of the Year, Tourism Champion, and Best Theatre Instructor. Ian's directorial resume is impressive too. He has tackled new works by local Canadian writers, modern classics such as All My Sons and Saltwater Moon, and several productions of Shakespeare, including a musical production of Romeo and Juliet. That was produced in my hometown, Port Perry, Ontario. Ian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
First things first, and I thought I'd get the most controversial question out of the way off the top. How have you been?
I realized about 2 weeks ago that this will be the first summer that I've not had a show in 6 or 7 years. And so, like, you know, being able to enjoy the sunshine instead of being, you know, inside a black box there's definite benefits to that. So,
yeah, I know a lot of people are in the same boat, probably experiencing summery things that they haven't for many years.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's like going to the beach is nice, you know, yeah. It's nice to be able to do that.
And, exactly.
To see family during the summer. It's a treat.
Yeah. My own vegetable garden is going gangbusters right now. So that's something.
Oh yeah. My house has never looked so clean.
Yeah. So I thought we'd just, you know, just let's go all the way back. Let's go back to the beginning. Tell me what drew you to the theater and what kept you going.
Sure. So I was, you know, a theater kid. I started very young. I was the star of my kindergarten show called Robin in the Rain. And basically from that point, I did, you know, theater became a huge part of my life. I was in a show at least every year. I grew up in Ottawa, so I went to Canterbury High School for the performing arts. It's always been part of who I am, and it's always been a great creative passion of mine. I went to university. I actually did sort of take a bit of a break from theater. I went into university thinking that I could do something else, trying to go down the academia route. but realized pretty quickly that it was not for me and that, you know, I needed to be in the room with people making art and theater. So while I was at the University of Carleton, I got involved with a theater company there called Sock and Buskin. It's, I think, one of Canada's oldest university theater companies. And it's actually where I ended up meeting my wife.
Oh, great.
I was back in my element. It was the most myself I had felt in quite some time. And it was pretty clear that I needed to get back into theater. So I applied for all the schools that weren't universities because I was pretty done with that. And I ended up getting accepted to George Brown, which is where I went to theater school. For acting. And I'm an actor and a director. And I mostly think of myself as a director these days. Right. And it was funny, the first night at George Brown for acting, like I was ready to focus on the acting thing. One of my classmates turned to me and said, "You know, you look like a director." And I was like, "Oh no, I've been caught." But anyways, but yeah, so I did the acting program there and I had the chance to do a little bit of direction, mostly outside of school. But also Jeanette Lambermont-Morey, who I know has been on your podcast, recognized that I had a director instinct. And so she actually had me as the text coach, which was basically an assistant director role on one of our grad shows at George Brown, which was really cool, Mary Stewart. And yeah, and then there was this thing called the Indie Producer Co-op that Theater by the Bay was launching. And this guy named Alex Doe came into our business of acting class and said, "Hey, I'm doing this co-op. I want to teach you guys how to create your own work. I want you to have a skill set of a theater producer." And, you know, I realized that that was an important skill set to have. So I applied and I was accepted. I was one of the two inaugural participants, came up to Barrie for the first time in my life and ended up spending 6 weeks working on a show that was on Barrie's waterfront. You know, there were sailboats on the water. It was beautiful. Right. And I said, "Wow, Barrie's fantastic." So I made it pretty clear that I wanted to be involved. And 5 years later, I'm running the place.
Wow. So you were handpicked right out of school.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
it's kind of like the CIA coming along and tapping someone on the shoulder and said, "You know, you're gonna work for us now."
That's it, pretty much. And I mean, I have been lucky. I've been able to do, you know, some different work across Ontario, but you know, Barrie became my home, and in every sense of the word, really. And yeah, it's where my focus is, obviously, right now.
Yeah. What is it you mentioned that somebody, you know, jokingly you said somebody said, "Oh, pegged you as a director right off the top." What do you think they saw in you, or what do you think is in you that that screams director?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess just like an analytical mind, and I think that might have come from the fact that I just came straight from like a liberal arts university education. I don't know. I don't know really what they saw, but if I had to guess, something like that. But you know, I've always been a big picture person, and right, obviously, and you know, I like being in charge. So I feel like director, and I also like working with people and helping people. That's a really important part of who I am. And so I think director nicely combines a lot of those skills.
Yeah. Did you have, was there a director, high school, university, or college, I guess, that you looked up to, or, you know, so that's, I want to pursue that because of that person?
Good question. I think it was, I mean, like my high school drama teacher, Paul Griffin, he recognized that I would be good at that and sort of encouraged me to try it out. And then as soon as I did, it just made sense.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, acting is obviously always my first love, but it just like clicked with who I was. And he gave me some opportunities to do that. And there's a part of Canterbury's training that in grade 12, you actually have to direct a short play. you know, over 3 weeks with grade 11 actors kind of thing. Right. So, you know, that was where I really tried it out. And he said, you're really good at this. And then he had me as the assistant director on our grad show there. So, you know, just that confidence, I guess, and that recognition of myself that, you know, he was right, propelled me and you know, it's never left.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so important to have someone like that.
Absolutely.
You know, in your that sort of kick in the pants or just you know, telling you that you're good at something, you know, when you is at that age, high school, you know, you don't have a lot of confidence.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so you graduated George Brown, you went straight into the it was like an apprenticeship or
co-op. Yeah.
Co-op. Yeah. Yeah. So you talked about, you know, Barrie and falling in love with the town of Barrie. So what was it like stepping into a professional theater sort of right away out of school?
I mean, it was wild. Like, you know, the whole training of the co-op, and the co-op has actually continued to this day, and now I teach it, which is really fun.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But, you know, a huge component of it is you're thrown in to the and you got to swim, right? So you're thrown all these different challenges every single day, and you've just got to learn to face them. You've got to make mistakes. You've got to learn from those mistakes as much as you can, so you try not to make them again, you know, and you have to take personal responsibility for the decisions that are made both by you and by your teams. And like, what an incredible thing to experience as a young artist right out of school, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, as I got more involved in the company formally, as a, outside of an educational capacity, like that training has been at the core of who I am. Like, I'm constantly making mistakes, and I'm constantly the one who has to like fall on his sword to fix them. And and you know, at the end of the day, like the company, the work of the company is a reflection of my work. So, that fire's always got to be there, and except now I don't have anyone to sort of like pat me on the back and tell me it's okay. Apart from like, I've got some great board members, but really like it's very self-determined. But I like that aspect of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I guess when you're steering the ship, you have to sort of navigate those waters, carefully. I was going to ask, how you go about selecting a season. Was it last year you were the artistic director?
Yes, yeah. 2019 was my first year as AD, although I was executive director for a couple of years before then.
Right. So go ahead. How do you go about selecting a season?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a couple of different things I keep in my mind. So, like, this season, ultimately, it comes down to the mandate, right? What is the company's mandate? And as an artistic director, you've got to think about ways that that mandate can evolve and be expanded while also staying true to its fundamental core and principles. So, you know, I think quite topically, a big thing for me was how do we increase the diversity of the stories that we're telling? So for your audience that may not be familiar, Theater by the Bay, our mandate is to create original new work about our community. So like Barrie and the surrounding area. And, you know, a lot of that history, especially written history, which is where we draw for a lot of our sources, has been white history.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate because Barrie has some fairly significant landmarks and communities like within it and outside of it, that speak to other histories. So for instance, there, just outside of Barrie in the town of Oro, there's a church there that was the heart of one of Ontario's first Black communities. Mm-hmm. And it was land that was given to soldiers that fought in the War of 1812, like Black Canadian soldiers that fought in that war, they were given this land. And the ironic twist is that the land was quite bad. But it was their home, right?
Yeah.
And at the heart of it was this church. So, you know, obviously, you know, we had to do a show about this church and this community,
sure.
Not only because it's a compelling story, but also because it does expand so organically from our mandate. You know, and so like, that's a big focus of mine, I guess. In terms of other stuff as a new work company, I'm always thinking like, part of it is that people have got to like pitch me shows that they're passionate about. And then mm-hmm. we try to find ways that make it work within, you know, the budget and the confines of the season. But also because our work is so locally focused, something else I try to think of or look at are what big historical events are coming up, right? So this mm-hmm. year, we were supposed to do a show that corresponded with the 35th anniversary of the Barrie tornado of 1985, right? Okay. So it landed so nicely on an anniversary event that it felt appropriate and kind of within the zeitgeist of the community at the time to tell a story about that event. And then hopefully these three things, like diversity, what people want to tell, and what I think should be told, compile into a nice sellable season.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, I guess I don't know how many other festivals or theater companies in Ontario have that sort of very local focus. I mean, a lot of community theaters will have to, they can do a local show, but they also have to do like a more established, well-known show to get the audiences in. But so yours sounds like a fairly unique in that respect.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's becoming more and more popular as people are waking up to the fact that communities want to see their stories told. Right.
Yeah.
But actually the reason it came about for us was because we surveyed our audiences. Right? We surveyed our audiences and asked them, like, one of the questions was, why did you see this show? Like, what was it about this show that spoke to you? Mm-hmm. And an overwhelming percentage said it was because they felt an emotional attachment to the story that was being presented. Right? Now, some communities could think, well, that means we've got to do Hello Dolly or Drowsy Chaperone or like these shows that people know, because that is how we connect with that emotional attachment. But we took it a different direction and said, well, okay, well, what if we did work about Barrie and about this community? And, you know, the results were remarkable. I mean, attendance blossomed in this way that we never could have potentially anticipated to start. Mm-hmm. We suddenly started getting all this attention. All these groups from outside of theater started like reaching out to us to be like, hey, you know, we should work together. And all these doors started opening. And it was just like, wow, okay, so we're clearly on the right track and doing something that the community wants, and that within that parameter or that mandate, there's so much room for experimentation and exploration. Like, it doesn't all have to be history plays. It can be, you know, as we've done, contemporary, you know, examinations. It can be like, I'd love to see like fantasy works about the area. I'd love to see like, you know, just the doors are wide open. And actually, I think another reason why I'm a director is that I like, you know, someone sort of saying, okay, here's the box, right? Like, I like drawing within the lines as creatively as possible. And as a director, like, your box is the script, and what you bring to the script and how you choose to represent that on a stage, you know, that's where the fun is. And in the same way, you know, we tell local stories. Theater by the Bay does work about local stories. Well, what does that mean? and you know, how can we really have a lot of fun and invention within that you know, that mandate.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. So you have, so to take the play about the Black Church in Oro. So how do you, so you know about it, or somebody comes to you and says there was this historical thing that happened. How do you go from there? Take me through the process.
Everyone's a little different, but I'll tell you about that one. So yeah. That show, it's a musical. It was actually our first music. It was going to be our first musical based on a local story. Okay. And there were a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, of course, you know, music is very central to, you know, Black Christianity and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We know for sure that there was, you know, a Black choir that did sing there and like that sort of thing. But also because the artist that I had actually approached to, like, and commissioned to create the work was a musical theater composer herself. Mm. So I thought that, like, you know, hey, and also her dad was a preacher. So like, okay, she had that sort of religious connection as well. Yeah. She's a musical theater writer. But then another important part of our mandate is that we hire local artists whenever possible. So last year we had an 85% local professional artist rate, which is, you know, Simcoe County basically.
Yeah.
You know, something that I think a lot of rural and you know, non-Toronto areas are facing is the fact that they want to be more diverse, but there aren't necessarily the numbers of artists that they would like from the area that they can, you know, bring on stage. So yeah. So my idea was, okay, well, finding, you know, 8 really remarkable, you know, Black actors from Simcoe County, possible, but who knows? However, yeah, Black singers who could act is a different, it opens up the pool in all these different ways and could potentially draw in a lot more people than perhaps, you know, if we had done a straight play about the church, might not.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to think a little strategically there, but the result was that we had the right person who was excited about the show. The show was going to be presented in a way that made sense to her creatively and made sense within, you know, the community as it exists right now.
Thinking about diversity and you know, how can we represent as many different people on the stage as we can? That sounds like it's really working in Barry. You're getting the audiences.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you know, this was going to be our big test this year, I'd guess. Like, we, of course, we had had shows that touched upon different experiences of different groups in the area, but none that had been so central. And this mandate is still relatively new, okay, but it's only, you know, 7 years that we've really started to embrace this this philosophy and this new mandate. But this was going to be our big, big test. So it's disappointing to that we had to pull the plug on it, at least for now. But, you know, also as a company that does new plays, you know, more time is always an asset, especially in the writing and creation phase. So, you know, I know our playwright and composer, you know, she was very, obviously she was disappointed, but she was like, yeah, that time could definitely be used.
You spoke about the, I think I saw it on the, on your website, is it called Green Skies, the one about the tornado?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So that was a cool little story. So of course, yeah, that was about the tornado, and it was written by a young guy who got his start with Theater by the Bay. So we used to run an actual young company, and he grew up through the young company and, like, you know, and got some of his first professional gigs with Theater by the Bay. And, you know, he had this idea of telling this story, and it was one that had been percolating in my mind too. And, you know, he called me on the right day, and we got talking, and he seemed like the right guy for the job. And yeah, he created something that's really, really cool, and that you know, approaches local history in a different way than a lot of people had been used to. It sort of the storytelling blended the past with the present in a really interesting way. Okay. So it was both contemporary, but also told the story well. And, you know, it's kind of, again, it's kind of ironic. I mean, here we were with a season where our show was about a community coming together after a tragedy. And our first musical that was about, you know, Black experiences in this area. So,
yeah,
that double header, you know, was great on paper and would have made a great season. But,
yeah.
So much control.
That's right. I was gonna ask, do you think, you know, there's this perception that I know Barry is not, it's not a small town. I mean, it's a growing place. It's a fairly large place, but still it's not Toronto. And do you think that there's this perception when you're in Toronto, it's like, well, that, and nothing exciting happens outside of the city. You know, but as you've shown, you know, there are tons of stories in these smaller communities outside of the city.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Barrie is very lucky. So we have two professional theater companies and they couldn't be more different from each other, which makes a really neat incubator kind of environment. Right. And you know, a lot of the big theater reviewers have actually noted this, and they've been like, how cool is it that in this city of 140,000 there's these two theater companies that are doing such different stuff and both of them so well and in their own unique way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's it's pretty awesome. But you know, I don't know. Frankly, the attention of Toronto in general isn't a priority for me. I think, like, at least as the head of Theatre by the Bay, as an artist, mm-hmm. I'd love if more people came up and saw my work and saw the work of these amazing sure. artists. But as the AD of Theatre by the Bay, you know, I guess like a community question is, how do we get more tourists up here, right? And I think a lot of the regional theater companies probably also ask, like, how do we get more of those Torontonians up here to see our stuff?
Yeah.
And my question that I always throw back at people when they ask these sorts of things is, okay, sure, but also, like, how do we get 10% of Barrie to see one of our shows every year?
Yeah.
Right? Like Barrie's 145,000 people.
Yeah.
If we had 10% of those people come and see a show, we'd oversell our season as it currently exists. Like, yeah. we'd be able to do, you know, so much more than we already do within this mandate. So, and, you know, something I'm very proud of with the company is the fact that a huge portion of our audience are people that have only seen, like, one show a year. And it's a Theatre by the Bay show. And that, to me, says one of two things. Either that they just don't see theater, but when they do see theater, it's a Theatre by the Bay show. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, they just don't see theater in general. And they came out because they care about this story kind of thing. So, and either way, that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, to get people, I mean, I guess that's sort of the holy grail, is to get those people who don't normally come to the theater, to get them into the theater. And yeah, I think by doing the local shows, you've probably hit upon something that could get those people out there.
For sure. I mean, yeah, we did a show about the First World War, mm-hmm. in Barrie, I guess a couple of years ago now. And we had like a massive portion of the military come out. Oh, and Barrie's right next to a military base.
Yes.
Base Borden. Yeah. And like, there were buses of military people who were like, oh my God, they're doing a show about, you know, the First World War in Barrie. They all came out to see it. They loved it. They told their friends, and then more and more came. Like, yeah. How many theater companies can say that, like, you know, there's this massive portion of people who, you know, stereotypically perhaps don't engage with theater, are coming out to see your stuff. Like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. How have you guys been sort of adapting to the new reality of COVID life?
Well, I'm part-time. That's changed for the first time in my life. And that's changed things a lot. No, it's been good. Well, it's been hard. you know, I had to cancel the contracts of like more than 60 artists. And like, you know, I had to say goodbye to a lot of money that was confirmed to pay said artists. And yeah. it was a season that I was really excited about. So yeah, to see it go was really, really tough, but you know, it's allowed us to focus on other elements of the company, which has been great. Like, you know, like we've done a lot of work on our internal planning and our operations and just, you know, some stuff that I've always wanted to do, like fixing our website and stuff like these sorts of things that don't usually get a lot of attention finally do. And also, you know, waking up to the realities of you know, BIPOC in our area and in, you know, the world right now, and really taking a hard look at our operations and saying, like, wow, like, you know, there's been a lot of white people in charge and at every level, and we have to do better. And, you know, like, we were already, I was hoping, on our way towards, you know, creating more inclusive environments, especially for artists of, you know, different backgrounds. But it's been propelled even further by, you know, the realities of the world right now. So that has been good. Like, that has been, like, coming up with an action plan to address that has been difficult, you know, and challenging, and, you know, like, it's cost friends in some cases, just being so transparent about, as we have about that, you know, it's affected and offended some of the old guards that were saying, oh, you know, we thought we were doing okay and everything, being like, no, we have to do better. Okay. Right. Doing okay isn't enough anymore. Yeah. You know, like those sorts of things was like, when else would we have had, especially during the summer, when else would we have had that collective pause to really think about that, live in that, and train ourselves so that way we can be better in the future? And again, you know, we started with thinking about the silver linings. I think that's a big one for me as a white cis arts leader, you know, and as someone who wants to do better overall. Mm-hmm. So.
In some ways, it's almost like it's fast forwarded us 10, 15 years into the future. What these kinds of things are typically a gradual change, but this current moment has sort of forced us to think we can change right now.
Absolutely. What are we doing right now? And a lot of like, if you've seen a lot of the interviews and talkbacks, and, you know, I applaud all the BIPOC artists that, you know, opened up the way that they did and you know, shared their stories and everything. Like, there are things that we can implement right now and think long term about and change incrementally, you know, like having a BIPOC or like having more representation on a board of directors is probably going to take a lot of time. And, you know, that's tied in with socioeconomics, that's tied into, you know, like wanting to avoid tokenism, like, and sure. the struggles that we put on BIPOC artists and community members, you know, as those gears get turning to start, like, that's going to take time, but, you know, it's work that needs to be done. And there's stuff that we can do much more effectively right now to create a more inclusive environment. And, you know, hopefully Theater by the Bay in 5 years from now will be a very different company than it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. Awesome. I noticed that you've been doing some Shakespeare as well. So is that strictly with Theater on the Bay? That's another company, or talk about that.
Yeah. So my wife and I, you know, we have lots of very talented friends. And the fact is that Barrie, there are not enough jobs for all the qualified artists that are up here.
I'm shocked. Shocked to hear.
No, right? I know. and Theater by the Bay simply can't be the only employer of art and stuff here. Like, we can't do it, right? So we had this idea of doing a Shakespeare production in our backyard. And this is actually something that I had done before in Toronto with some friends. But we happen to live in a place that has a really nice big backyard. And we're like, this could work. Like, we could do a show here. So we literally emailed our friends. And well, obviously, it happened over beer. So we went to Flying Monkey Brewery downtown Barrie. Definitely check it out if you're in the area.
There's a plug for that. Okay.
Yes, there you go. And we were having beers and we're like, we should do Midsummer Night's Dream. Like, start with a nice comedy. And then it was like, oh my gosh, you know who'd be so good for Bottom? Oh my gosh, he'd be perfect. So we came up with our casting like almost instantly. We emailed all our friends. They said yes. And they were like, yeah, totally. This sounds cool. And and then we ended up like selling out a bunch of our performances and the buzz was crazy. Like, people loved that there was Shakespeare happening in this like backyard. And our backyard's like, you know, Barrie has lots of old trees. We're in an old neighborhood. So Barrie's lots of old trees and everything. So it provided this like perfect canopy.
Oh, nice.
And like, as the show went on, of course, the sky got dark and the artificial lights came on for the show within the show and all that kind of stuff. And it was awesome. Like, it was so much fun. And, you know, as new things often go, once you start, it's like things just start to happen. It's pretty amazing. So there, you know, there was someone in the audience there who ended up working for a resort in Innisfil, and they're like, hey, we want to buy a show of yours to come and perform at our resort next year.
Oh, cool.
And then it was like, okay. And then, you know, as we were in the middle of rehearsals for Midsummer Night's Dream, we started thinking about the show we wanted to do next year. And that ended up to be Macbeth. And so my wife and I got to play Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, like, with each other, which was really awesome.
Yeah.
It just kind of, launched this whole thing. And ironically, Theater by the Bay actually started as a Shakespeare company.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah. Back in 2002, it was our first season of Midsummer Night's Dream, of course. And, Theater by the Bay sort of drifted away from that as it became more difficult to do and the audience didn't seem to be there. But the novelty of Shakespeare in a backyard, like with 40 seats in the house or whatever, and, you know, a bunch of local professional theater actors with nothing else to do, just created this like perfect storm of awesome theater.
And
we've been carrying on since then, and we were actually supposed to do Merry Wives of Windsor this year, which would have been really cool.
So it's
awesome. And it's funny, like, it helps me kind of connect back to my indie theater producer roots.
Right.
Like, when I was an indie producer for Theater by the Bay, like, it's very lightweight. It's very beg, borrow, steal. It's very everyone just leaning on each other, profit share at the end of the show, whatever it is, everyone just takes it kind of thing after expenses. It's something we look forward to every summer.
That's great. It's like you've turned your... it's like a hobby you've turned into sort of a cottage industry.
Totally. Actually, seriously, like, we've got ideas for how this thing could grow and bring in more people and stuff.
Coming to a backyard near you someday soon.
Seriously, actually though, like, hey, do you want a full professional Shakespeare production in your backyard? You know, carrying that on is really important to us. It's a really fun project. And I actually proposed on the opening night of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Now, who was she playing? Was she playing Helena or Hermia?
She was Helena, yes.
Okay, there you go.
And I was the director.
So looking sort of 5 years in the future, where do you see Theater by the Bay in 5 years?
So Theater by the Bay, 5 years from now, I hope to... be more than a $500,000 organization. I'd love to see it start to do work all year round. you know, and so like we've often been confined by the summer because of the traditional Shakespeare by the waterfront in the summer model. Yeah. But I think our shows would have much greater impact outside of the summer, especially, you know, because people don't really want like heavy tragedies on a beautiful July day for the most yeah. part. I'm you know, of course I'm, that's a little tongue in cheek, but you know, like, so, but why not? Like, let's think about that. Let's really think about that. But yeah, so I'd love to see work happen all year round. Also, education and training are a really important aspect. Like if we're going to create, if we're going to, you know, employ artists to create work all year round, and if we're going to, you know, be a company that's committed to doing solely new work, that's we're going to require a lot of people, and a lot of people need a lot of training. So, you know, we're going to want to provide those kinds of opportunities, especially in leadership kind of roles, like, you know, the Indie Producer Co-op being expanded, you know, this Emerging Director Project, which is a theater directing training program I launched this year. I'd love to see like that become more of a thing. You know, are expanding our Barry Theater Lab, which is a playwriting series that we do. Yeah, so that way, like, there's always new work being created by new people coming in and being involved all the time for work that happens all year round, you know, by as broad of a diverse community as we can, as exists in Barry and even more, because Barry as a community is still very white. So, you know, we want to see lots and lots of representation because that is changing.
We've been asking these questions of all of our guests so far. The first question is, what is your most memorable experience as an audience member?
Wow. As an audience member. Okay. So I guess I've got two. Both happened actually just around the time that I decided I wanted to pursue theater, interestingly. So the first one was, I saw a production of the first production I ever saw of Oedipus Rex while I was living in England. And, the moment where, and it was actually, it was a gender swapped cast, which was very like avant-garde in 2004 or whatever it was, it felt at least to me. The actor who played Oedipus, she came out and did the cry when she realizes everything that's happened. And I just remember like it just reverberating through my body and like through the audience in this really profound, shocking way. And as a young audience member, like that has always stuck with me, and you know, I can hear it even now, which is pretty cool. And then the other one was I saw a production of Brian Friel's Dancing at Lunasa when I was 14, and it feels like it's my family's story. And I saw it with my dad, and he basically is Michael from Dancing at Lunasa. So it felt like the most personal show I had ever seen at the time. Right. I also knew the actor who played Jerry and Chrissy, and you know, I was very shocked when they kissed and everything. I thought it was very shocking, but I just remember that play really sticking with me and just feeling like part of my story had been told. My life story had been told on stage. And yeah, that feeling, you know, has always stuck with me. And, you know, I guess perhaps in some way it fuels what I do now of hopefully telling other people's stories and providing a forum for them to see themselves on stage. But then I also had the pleasure of actually directing Dancing at Lunasa last year. Okay. And it also felt like this full circle kind of thing where I saw it when I was 14, you know, and I directed it at 28 or whatever. It was pretty cool.
The other question we're asking everybody and is, since we have all been self-isolating now for God knows 3 years at least, what is the one play, if you had to choose one, you would take into your self-isolated room and you had no other plays to read?
Ooh. Well, I'm a pretty big Shakespeare nerd, so I've got like a copy of my complete works that I'd probably take, and then there's 32 plays right there.
Yeah.
But I'm also a bit of a sadist. I love Wajdim Wawad's work, and I'm obsessed with his play Forests. Okay. Do you know it?
No, I don't know it. No.
Yeah, so it's like it's part of his like cycle of plays about like violence and family and blood and like all this stuff. It's like a multi-generational and it's brutal, but the prose in it are amazing and the characters are great. I'd probably only read it like maybe two or three times if this thing came up, but it would live with me for a long time. And I'm just waiting for, you know, the day I win the lottery and I can do my full version of that show at some point. So give me more time to do work.
Yeah, for sure.
As well.
Well, on that cheerful note, it's been great talking to you. It's really cool to talk to someone like you who like it's clear you have like a really strong vision of where you want the company to go and pretty forward looking. I mean, you sort of anticipated all the things that we're talking about now, and it's just a shame that we can't you haven't been able to put those plans together this year, but hopefully next year, fingers crossed.
Yeah, we're doing some shuffling around, but yeah. It will, all the work will be seen for sure. And I appreciate that, and I like that you guys are doing this. I think it's a great way for us as a community to feel connected, and that, you know, and just to chat with new people. And, you know, I love Theater on the Ridge. I think what you guys are doing is really cool. So, I'm happy to be part of it. And I look forward to the day I can go to Old Flame and, you know, go see the old town hall and all that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
No problem.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and would like us to continue creating content and programs such as Big Theater Small Towns, please consider making a donation. Your contribution can be made at www.theaterontheridge.ca and will help us keep the doors open and the programs coming. If you've already donated, thanks so much, and we look forward to gathering with you once again in the theater someday soon.